When we discuss food culture in the U.S., we typically think of the chic restaurants on the East or West Coast. People don't often make overtures about Midwestern food staples like meatloaf, but a new book is trying to change the way people understand Midwestern cuisine. Current State's Emmanuel Berry spoke with the author of Fried Walleye and Cherry Pie. Emmanuel, what'd you learn about our region's food culture here?
Well, when I think about Midwestern food, I think about tuna noodle casserole that my mom makes. Heavy, hearty food, carbs and meat. And while this book does embrace kind of that Midwestern staples of meat and potatoes, it also kind of expands beyond that a bit.
So what type of recipes are in this book then?
Well, there actually aren't many recipes in the book. There are a couple, but it's actually a book filled with stories that just happen to be about food. So there's things like odes to meatloaf, lemon meringue pie, fudge, and the fish boil in Door, Wisconsin, and Door County in Wisconsin, which I've never heard of, but apparently it's delicious. So when I spoke to the book's author, Peggy Wolf, she said that she wrote the book because she wanted to kind of share these Midwestern food treasures that are often overlooked.
What I began to see after I had moved back to the Midwest that every single food trend that you can see on either coast is happening here. I mean, we don't have Meyer lemons that grow in alleys like they do in California, and we can't grow pomegranates because we're restricted to our weather and our geography. But I felt that the Midwest was underappreciated. It is underrepresented, and it's really a hidden gem, and we get a bad rap.
You start this book by writing this introduction about your own kind of introduction into the world of food. You receive a letter from a lady who you say is second only to Eleanor Roosevelt at the time, from Betty Crocker. Tell us what happened.
I learned that Eleanor Roosevelt, who was over in Kenya, was trying to improve the flour over there, and she was writing to Betty Crocker. Betty Crocker, in my generation, is the Martha Stewart of today. So to sit down and write Betty a letter because my chocolate chip cookies didn't come out, I mean, this is what we did in my family. And I got a package back from Betty, and to see this wrapped package on my doorstep from Betty, it just was, it just launched me. And I thought, I'm good to go. I'm in the kitchen, you know. She was a celebrity, and I felt I was rubbing elbows with Betty Crocker.
When you think of the Midwest and Midwestern food, you think of kind of this really hearty, heavy food. Like, I think of my mom's tuna noodle casserole. How do you define Midwestern food?
Well, I think you can look at tradition, and I think you can look at change, because so many of our traditions in the Midwest have been brought to us by immigrants. The Door County fish boil, you cannot go to Door County and not go to a fish boil. It's like you haven't done Door unless you do. I think Chicago is Chicago. I don't even think, although there are chefs here who are reviving Midwestern cuisine, I do think of protein and carbohydrates. I think of meat and potatoes. And I have always thought of that as the Midwest. I've been crisscrossing through Iowa and Indiana and so on, and have been at wonderful restaurants that have the best fried chicken I've ever had, the best pork tenderloin sandwiches ever. I think Midwesterners still want meat and potatoes.
Did working on this book at all change your definition of Midwestern food?
Yes, it did, because you have a restaurant up in Kalamazoo called Food Dance, and I've eaten there a few times. I was watching the trend of whole animal butchering, which has come to Kalamazoo. I mean, these folks bring in the entire animal into the back room and they dismantle it there. They are not buying meats that are shrink-wrapped on a styrofoam tray, okay, which I think used to be in the way, you know, the way that restaurants had ordered food many, many, many years ago. But this was a change, whole animal butchering, and I see it all over the country. So a lot of the trends that I'd seen, eat local, eat the least traveled food, this is happening here in the Midwest. It's happening on either coast, too, but it is also happening here.
as you mentioned, there are these trends, but there is this hearkening back to nostalgia. And I think that the first story in this collection really gets at that. It's about meatloaf, of all things. The writer, Elizabeth Berg, she manages to make meatloaf sound romantic, if that's possible. She writes, "There used to be a lot of support for serving meatloaf. I'm sure the Stones and the Cleavers had it all the time. Probably Ed Sullivan, too, although you never got to see him eat. Every time I saw a cowboy movie where the handsome lead would stay to dinner after having mended the fence, I was sure that meatloaf was what he had eaten." This is not a recipe book. These are stories that feature food. Why do you think that food is an important topic to center these really fascinating stories around?
You know, the best food writing isn't about food. And I think I have 30 essays to prove that, though they are food-centric on everything from meatloaf to rhubarb, Italian beef to foie gras, or state fair foods, slaughterhouses, and goodness, a lot of pie. The real story...
a lot of pie.
A lot of pie. My writers were fighting over who would get the pie essay. I got some people mad at me, saying it was already assigned. The dirt, as they say, is what's behind the story. See, Elizabeth Berg's meatloaf that leads off the book, I think she told me in a conversation once that that recipe came off the side of an oatmeal box. What she misses is family dinner time. It's a very sentimental essay.
Mm-hmm.
And when you mention the word nostalgic, all I can think of when I was doing research for this book was a woman. She lived in an old order Amish community in northern Indiana, Elizabeth Koblenz, and she wrote by kerosene at night just about her family, the weddings, life on an Amish farm. Did she have 8 children? Her articles were syndicated in like 1,200 newspapers nationwide because people were dying to hear about scratch brownies again.
This is Emmanuel Berry. I'm speaking with Peggy Wolf, editor of the book Fried Walleye and Cherry Pie, a collection of tasty stories about Midwestern food. For your own essay, you mentioned this earlier, the Door County fish boil, Door County in Wisconsin. I've never heard of this before until reading it, and it has this very kind of unique cooking process that takes place outside. Explain what a fish boil is for those of us who are clueless.
People think, ugh, boiled fish, okay, first of all. But it is... it's like food as entertainment. When you go to Door County, there are, I want to say, 83 fish boils a night in all different kinds of restaurants because it has become a phenomenal tourist draw. The fish boil used to be a way of feeding lumbermen in camps 150 years ago and feeding fishermen who had gone out on the Great Lakes and to catch fish, and they were hungry, and they did boil fish. At the time it was trout, lake trout, on the boat as they were coming back to shore, and the fish was fatty because the fish spent a lot of time in these cold waters. They do develop fat, and it did boil over. Those were, and you can believe either legend where it started, I mean, because Wisconsinites fight about was it the lumber camp or the fishermen, but it doesn't matter. It was a way of feeding large groups of people. And what happened was a restaurant, I think it was in the 60s, took it over and started replicating the fish boil. They would have on an outdoor gravel pit a setup. You could not get near the flames or the pot or your hair would be singed or worse. They boil water in a huge cauldron over a fire. They put the red potatoes in. They need 30 minutes to cook. And about 12 minutes before they're done, they put the fish in, and they are chunks of whitefish, nice 5-inch chunks. And the fish cook, and just as they're done, they throw kerosene on the fire below, which causes the whole thing to flare up and into this giant flame, which is why it's like entertainment. You
yeah.
stand back and everybody's zoom lens are out to capture the moment, and the water boils over. And what they're left with is cooked fish and cooked red potatoes.
Hmm.
And that's the fish boil.
Interesting. Never, ever heard of that. And it doesn't sound fish. Boiled fish does not sound appetizing at first, but I would definitely try that.
I didn't think it would sound appetizing, but when I first had it back in the 80s, I found that there was some sweetness to freshly caught. It was caught that morning on the lake at 5 a.m. and brought in on a boat. And so there you have same-day fish, which it had some sweetness to it.
Do you see Midwestern food becoming a trend on a larger scale? So Midwest-themed restaurants or food on the coast in New York, L.A., that sort of thing.
I don't know. I think that's left up to the people who really predict trends. But if you look at Food Channel, Food Channel Network, they have for 2014 predicted food trends, and number one is Midwestern food.
Interesting.
Because what they're counting on for this kind of a review or whatever of Midwestern food is that it's all about farm fresh and local, taken to the next level, using the types of foods that are readily available in the Midwest. And to them, the East Coast is known for Italian, the West Coast for seafood, and perhaps it's just time that the Midwest became much more than a flyover state.
Peggy Wolf is the editor of the book Fried Walleye and Cherry Pie. She'll be in Kalamazoo at the Michigan News Agency along with contributor Bonnie Jo Campbell on Saturday afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Peggy, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
For Current State, I'm Emmanuel Berry.